A few months ago, the Utah Department of Transportation chose a gondola over a number of other options for dealing with traffic congestion and dangerous conditions in the steep, avalanche-prone two-lane highway in Little Cottonwood Canyon. When we mentioned we were doing a show on the case against the gondola, we heard from a lot of people, which gave us a sense of the array of interests in that place. We heard from engineers and planners and environmentalists. Some of the most outspoken people who reached out use the canyon for recreation. And not just skiers, of course, trail runners and hikers and mountain bikers and rock climbers, of course, who told us they stand to lose the most to the gondola. Nathaniel Coleman is a professional climber from Murray. He won a silver medal at the 2020 Olympics in Tokyo. He discovered the canyon when he was just a kid.
I was probably 10 or 11. I had been climbing for a year or two, and my coach took me out to Little Cottonwood for the first time. He showed me some of the easier climbs, and I wasn't able to do anything because Little Cottonwood makes for really difficult climbing. And then the rest of the day, I just watched him and some of his friends climb, and I just watched them do these moves that I thought were truly impossible for the human body to do. And it turns out those boulders that they were doing were only of a very moderate difficulty in the grand scheme. But it is still a very inspirational afternoon for me. Three, 4 years later, when I was 15, me and my friends started going up to Little Cottonwood, you know, without our coaches and kind of starting to find our own way through climbing. And I remember doing this one specific boulder problem that I had watched my coach climb years before. And it didn't feel that hard to me. Climbing in Little Cottonwood is very difficult. It's very technical, and it requires you to build skill, movement knowledge, not only strength. So, when a climber is produced by season after season of climbing in Little Cottonwood Canyon, they emerge a very well-rounded climber. Bouldering in Little Cottonwood is a finite resource. As far as I understand it, the gondola will remove or reposition a certain number of boulders. And all boulders are not created equally. These boulders that will be moved, there's maybe a dozen boulders that will be affected, but one or two of them are like really special boulders, really good climbing with long histories of ascents, the kind of boulder that you can talk to the previous generation and the generation before them and share what your solution was and have that connection. Once those boulders are gone, it's a permanent decision. They're never coming back. As a climber who has grown up in Little Cottonwood and seen what an effect it can have on a climber's future, I just really want to protect these boulders. They are a part of our history. They are irreplaceable, and the gondola is a threat to that and to our whole experience of climbing in Little Cottonwood Canyon.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're going to hear the case against a gondola in Little Cottonwood Canyon. On previous shows, we've heard from supporters of the idea. We've worked through the basics of the plan by the Department of Transportation. The idea, as you probably know by now, is this series of phases. And the last phase is to construct more than 20 matrixed towers that are upward of 200 feet tall with concrete bases around 30 by 40 feet. We're going to begin by challenging some of the economic and engineering assumptions made by supporters of the gondola. We talked with Mike Marker this week. He lives at the base of the canyon. He's president of a group called Friends of Little Cottonwood Canyon. And he's also a retired business consultant. In fact, that's where he began his critique, with the money.
It's fiscally irresponsible to spend $1.6 billion on something that benefits such a small segment of our society, our culture here. It benefits two private companies that are, frankly, are financially secure. It's just inconsistent with what I think how tax dollars should be used. The construction of this thing potentially threatens the water supply for 60% of the valley. You know, that's not a question. If you talk to the water experts, they say they have some real concerns about that. It will irreparably damage this jewel of the Wasatch. There isn't a space in this state that's like Little Cottonwood Canyon. I mean, it's granted there is a certain level of development that's already transpired, but even so, it's pristine by most standards. Within 20 minutes of a state capital, you can be in a designated wilderness area. You know, it is a place where people can get away from the rush and the crush of the valley floor and enjoy nature without there being the imposition of concrete and steel structures surrounding them. There's nothing like it. And going beyond the state of Utah, I've traveled a lot, and I've not seen anything so closely positioned to a metropolitan area to provide that same sense of respite.
Can I push back a moment on the question of whether or not that canyon is in fact pristine? Because this is something that you're hearing from those who favor the gondola, that we lost the chance for that canyon to actually be pristine decades and decades ago when they put up ski lift towers and cut out swaths of trees for ski runs, that it's not really pristine. And you've heard the argument that the gondola towers are just glorified ski lift towers.
Well, they aren't glorified ski lift towers for a couple of reasons. One, a ski lift tower is what, 30, 40 feet maybe? It runs at 90 degrees to the road. It blends into the trees. We're talking 22 towers, averaging 200 feet tall, one of which will be 263 feet tall, five of which will have flashing lights on top because they're in excess of 200 feet, and that's the FAA and FCC requirements that has that in place. These towers will blend into nothing. Now,
yeah, to the question of whether it's pristine.
Whether it's pristine. You know, it's an 8-mile long canyon, and the development has been basically restricted to a certain area. So fine, you know, let that flourish. Let it continue to provide the area, the recreational opportunities that those areas provide. But the rest of the canyon is pristine. And so the gondola is suggesting would, in essence, then take that concept of development and run it up and down the canyon. That is a step back, a major step back, in having a space that allows people to get away from the same kinds of issues of construction and man-made structures that the valley floor has.
Okay, so here's what seems to be the crucial question about this issue. What's the problem that we're trying to solve here? What is the problem that the Utah Department of Transportation has tried to solve? Now, the basic answer, Mike, is traffic congestion. But it seems as though you are raising your own questions about whether, in fact, there is a problem, or at least at the scale that you need something like a gondola. You've written that the gondola proposal hasn't been accurately represented. And that the premise about growth and traffic and the number of skiers, you've said, is faulty. And you mentioned this report by this organization called the Mountain Accord. Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about that. You're challenging the premise here?
The Mountain Accord, the problem, the presenting problem had always been congestion.
Yeah.
And UDOT has measured the level of that problem. And they're saying it's running somewhere between 11 and a half and 20 days per year on average that we have road closures.
Right.
And that we have maybe 50 hours of closure time. So we had, roughly a dozen or so incidences of closure totaling 50 hours of closure time. That's a small problem to want to spend $1.6 billion to solve, when we think we can come up with other solutions that can address that issue.
Let me see if I understand you right. If the Mountain Accord report is right, that winter traffic in Little Cottonwood Canyon is not as bad as some are suggesting, certainly doesn't rise to the level you say of spending that much money.
I'm using UDOT's data.
Okay, using anyone's data. And the growth in the valley doesn't mean winter traffic will actually increase. So you're not saying there isn't a problem. You're saying it just doesn't rise to the level.
Yeah, I'm also not in a place that says we should do nothing.
Right.
I'm saying that there are solutions that can address the congestion issue in a better way that does not destroy the canyon, does not have the negative impact that a gondola would. Now, what UDOT has done is they've added an objective that's in the EIS, and occasionally you hear people talking about it, but for the most part...
Let's explain EIS, an environmental impact statement. I think most people know that, but we'll get back actually to this part, but keep going.
UDOT's objective is to increase the number of people in the canyon. It's stated that one of their objectives is to increase the number of people in the canyon by 2,300 visitors per day. And that's based on an assumption that the valley floor is going to grow. The population of the valley floor will grow by 47%. And we would question that numbers as well. But let's, for the sake of this conversation, let's say that the valley floor will grow to that number. UDOT is saying that these canyon areas can and must accommodate that growth. And the problem that we have with that is that they conducted this environmental impact statement, and they're saying that they want to add people, not just solve a congestion problem, but add additional people into the canyon. Yet nowhere in their impact statement did they study the capacity of the canyon and what is the impact of adding another 2,300 people per day. That seems to run counter to what the purpose, the intent, and the objective of conducting an environmental impact statement is. They totally ignored it.
I want to come back to that point in just a moment. Last year, you wrote an op-ed piece for the Salt Lake Tribune, and you said that the ski resorts in that canyon, Alta and Snowbird, you said need to basically mind their business. You said mind their business problems and solve them.
Right.
Explain what you mean.
Well, it's a corollary to my thought that this is not a fiscally appropriate place to be putting money. Private folks would be the primary beneficiaries of this. And there's a business problem. We have ski areas that basically want to move 16,000 to 17,000 people into a position in the canyon to the ski slopes, either for skiing or for servicing that activity. And they need to get those folks up there in a roughly a 2-hour window. Mm. That's a bunch of folks. And likewise, on the way down at the same time, people want to exit the canyon. They want to maximize their recreation dollars, and so they're going to ski till the slopes close at 4 o'clock. And then again, that 2-hour – we call it the shotgun start and the afternoon flush. Everybody wants to move at the same time. And that's a business problem. And that's a business problem business people should solve. Now, Brighton – has done something to solve that, along with some other ski areas. They have different segments of time. So not everybody starts at 9 a.m. Brighton has three different segments of ski time, which means that people don't have to show up to have a skiing experience. Big Mountain in Montana is toying with the same idea, to sell segments of time so that not everyone has to show up at the same time. You maximize the experience, exposure, and you allow people to select different blocks of time. Now, whether that would work here or not, I don't know, but it's a business solution that business people apply to solve a business problem.
I want to come back to something you were mentioning before about this sort of premise used by the Department of Transportation about growth. What is wrong with this idea that if the population along the Wasatch Front grows, that you ought to then accommodate more people going into the canyon? Like, what's wrong with that? And who are you supposed to exclude?
It's a math question. Huh. The growth in the state, and specifically in this valley, is causing people to consider a lot of things that are impacted by growth. We have a Great Salt Lake problem. It's drying up. Mm. That's a math problem. Mm. The lake requires X amount of gallons to sustain its level. There's only X amount of gallons coming into it. It's a math question. You got to figure out how do you manage that. Same thing in these canyons is that it's a 5-pound grocery bag, and we're trying to get 10 pounds of groceries into it. Mm-hmm. It's a math question. At some point in time, you're trying to get 16,000 people into a space in 2 hours.
Okay. All right. Stipulated. Okay. Now, who do you keep out?
Right. Well, we're starting to understand that as we watch other areas. The national parks acknowledge our southern – we see it in the state of Utah. With COVID being the great desettler of so many of our activities, and a lot of people started moving to the outdoors, massive numbers of people started showing up to the parks such that they were overrunning it. They were loving them to death. Mm. And the park managers started realizing, wait a minute, these massive numbers of folks, we're trying to pour too many people. Too many people are trying to get through the gates to experience the resource. They saw two things happening. One is that the resource was starting to be degraded. And two, the numbers of people were negatively impacting the visitor experience. Hmm. So they started implementing visitor management techniques, reservations, establishing what's our capacity to protect the resource and ensure that our guests have a good visit. Now,
and you're saying that is not being done in this process?
Not being done. You need to start with what's the capacity. What do we as the citizens of Utah want for an experience in these spaces? Mm. The other thing I've questioned as well is UDOT is saying, well, you have to allow these people to come into this space. My question is rather, as we are bringing more and more people into the state, why are we not developing more recreational areas? So instead of trying to shove people into this small canyon, let's have additional recreational places. And we have to provide that.
What's your problem with the way the environmental impact process played out? And by that, I want to sort of now plug in the – because this has been an important critique from opponents of the gondola process, how the public sentiment, how that played into, you know, the interest or the mandate offered by the Department of Transportation.
Starting with the general outcome. Many segments of the public feel the way in which the UDOT's process has been managed is that they started with a foregone desired outcome, and they've managed the process to that end.
That's a strong contention. Make that case, if you would.
Okay.
You're saying the project was predetermined from the beginning. Are you saying that it did not matter to the Department of Transportation what the public said or what the facts may have played out during that process, that they had an end goal in mind and they wanted to head there?
It feels that way.
Okay. But you saying it feels that way is different from making the case.
I can't really get inside of someone's head and determine motivation. I will just try to understand it based on what I've experienced, what I've seen, reactions, how the process omitted things, ignored things. It makes it feel like you guys are not that stupid. How did you miss this? Unless fill in the blank.
How settled do you think this gondola project is right now? I mean, it's been approved by the Department of Transportation, of course. Lawmakers have started to provide funding. You yourself, Mike, have said that, you know, when you're talking about a phased process, that implies you're phasing something in. So you're headed to a kind of a goal. And the final goal officially is the gondola. So
right.
is it too late?
No, it's not, and it's based on funding. While UDOT has made the recommendation, the record of decision is that they want to build this gondola in three phases, only phase one is funded. And so it really comes back down to, is there stomach for the balance of the $1.6 billion? Now, under our concept of common sense solutions is a phased approach, and let's apply these cost-effective impactful small things that collectively could have the impact of solving the congestion problem. And let's do as many of those as we can until we don't need to go any further. Phase one that you identified, it really aligns well with the concept of common sense solutions. Enhanced busing. That's increasing the frequency during the rush hours, buses between a frequency of every 10 to 15 minutes. Tolling, that's a way of managing the number of cars going up, getting people to increase the occupancy of the vehicle, establishing more efficient pickup and drop-off areas. Those are all positive things. Part of our thinking about when we talk about common sense phase solutions is we want an assessment at the end of phase one. Did we have positive impact?
Yeah.
Have we done enough to solve the
problem? Is that built into the process?
It's not.
Yeah.
It is not. Now, it's built into what some of our local leaders, Jenny Wilson, when she talks about common sense solutions, you know, it's right in there. Said, let's assess what this is. Meryl Zotansky, let's assess how well we did on this. And if we can solve it in phase one, let's save the money, the balance of the $1 billion, and apply it someplace else. But it is not; there is not an assessment built in. It would be more comfortable if I saw a resolution, if I saw legislation, if I saw something that required an assessment of the success of phase one before we move to phase two and three.
Mm-hmm. That's Mike Marker. He's president of the group Friends of Little Cottonwood Canyon. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're continuing our coverage of the gondola. The Department of Transportation has settled on a plan to build the world's longest gondola up Little Cottonwood Canyon. Earlier, we've talked about the particulars of the plan, like how it would work, how much such a thing would cost, and who would pay for it. We've also heard from supporters of the idea, but today we're going to hear the case against the gondola. We talked to Carl Fisher this week. He's executive director of the group Save Our Canyons, and he's deeply concerned about the damage the gondola could do to the canyon's water and its ecosystems. But he began with the character of the Wasatch Canyons, which he says have intrigued people for hundreds of years.
Before even the pioneers settled this place, these canyons were really important to the tribes that inhabited this region. It's a place that they all gathered. Rock climbing was practically birthed here in the Wasatch. When you hear stories of Ted Wilson and Rick Reese using their mother's laundry like line to put some of the first ascents in that canyon. One of our founders, Alexis Kellner, a refugee of the World War, that found himself in Utah, and he said, you know, he found himself walking around the mountains of Europe from refugee camps just to try and escape that situation, only to find himself here in the Wasatch Mountains and putting some first ascents up in the Lone Peak Cirque and pioneering ski touring in the Wasatch Mountains as well.
Do you think in some way that canyon, like, do you think about it differently than some other canyons maybe? Is there a kind of, I don't know, character or personality about that? I mean, it's steep. It's sort of confined. Is there something kind of special about that particular canyon?
Yeah. I mean, I worked at Snowbird for a number of years, and I'd get up there early in the morning and set up the parking lots because that's where I worked, was in parking and helping with the traffic and stuff like that in the canyons during the Olympics. And there was something about being in that canyon in the morning, watching the alpenglow just overtake the granite the way that the white rocks reflect the red morning sun, and just kind of wrapped you in the dead of winter in this warm blanket, the way that canyon, the U-shaped canyon, kind of hugs you as you're up in that canyon. Yeah, it's just an incredibly special place. I mean, people talk about Yosemite, but I mean, this is our Yosemite here in the Wasatch Mountains.
What do you think this is about, this issue? I mean, on one hand, obviously, it's this in some ways quite technical argument and debate about
whether a gondola is the best solution for whatever the problem is, and we'll get to the problem in a second, because I think you have a unique sort of insight on what the quote-unquote problem is. But what is this about? If you take out the sort of particulars of the debate, is there something larger here that we're – because people are incredibly passionate about this conversation. I mean, there were 50,000 some odd comments. You know, we're hearing from people all the time about this. So like, what is it about?
I really think it's about getting more people to snowbird in particular, but to both of the ski areas. The road is a constraint on visitation. We've often said this isn't about getting 30% of the people off the road. This is about getting 30% more people to the ski resorts at the cost of the taxpayer, of the community.
Let's talk about the problem, because one of the things UDOT will say and proponents of the gondola will say is the problem is traffic congestion. Is that the problem? Because it seems like one of the things you're saying is that there isn't a fair and accurate expression of what that problem is. And so without it, how do you solve it?
Yeah, I think they looked at 4 months out of the year. They ignored 8 months. They ignored every other use and value in that canyon as they defined their purpose and need.
They defined the use as just resort skiing.
Resort skiing is the singular use of that. And I think that really gets to the crux of what this issue is Little Cottonwood Canyon a ski resort, or is it more than that? Does it mean more than just the recreation industrial complex of commercialized skiing?
What are the other interests then out there? And maybe you can mention the other sort of recreational interests, because we've heard from climbers. We know there are backcountry skiers. We know there are trail runners. I mean, we've gotten an earful from people who are invested in that. So what are the other interests there? And because then I want to move beyond recreation, because it seems like we're defining the value of that place through its recreational opportunities. But talk about what are the interests up there?
I mean, the reason I find the context of our national forest here, the public lands in the Central Wasatch Mountains, an interesting history. The reason this national forest was established was because the pioneers moved here, you know, in the 1847, 1850. By the turn of the century, by 1900, they had logged and mined the entire canyon. The water was undrinkable. There was a quote from Albert Potter, who brought Gifford Pinchot out here through these forests. And he said, arriving at Alta, a novel view meets one's eye. Here's an old mining camp that has been worked until both the ore and the timber were pretty well exhausted. The stumps show it to have been well forested originally, but every tree and seedling has been cut. It certainly is a picture of forest destruction, and I do not wonder that the town was once destroyed by a snowslide coming down the denuded mountainside. As I remarked to Mr. Finch, it would be hard to find a seedling big enough to make a club to kill a snake. The state of Utah invited the federal government in to help manage this resource.
Because they had almost destroyed it.
Because we had destroyed it. And I fear we are headed down a path where we are repeating the mistakes of the past. The primary purpose of this canyon is water. Without the waters that flow from the Wasatch Mountains, this community that we all live in would not exist.
Does it bother you then that often the conversation is about recreation? That seems to be the focus of it. How do we get people up that canyon so they can ski or, you know, whatever? Because it sounds like what you're saying is if we – in some ways this is a conversation about what we value. And
people do talk about the watershed, but it doesn't seem like that's at the top of the list.
Yes, it bothers me immensely, keeps me up at night. Hmm. I wrote an article for our newsletter years ago about how many people can you fit in the Volkswagen bug? You know, there were always these competitions. And it feels like that's the game that we are trying to play. And there are users fighting over turf. And the experience, the place, the majesty, and the water that connects us all seem to fall by the wayside as people try to pursue adventure. And, you know, I love to backcountry ski. I love to climb. I bike and I trail run up there. These recreational uses are consumptive uses of the landscape. Hmm. And I think that you look at Snowbird and Alta's desire for perpetual growth in a finite resource, and they're literally converting this canyon into something to serve their singular purpose.
How do you explain how this gondola project came together? When you look at the process, and I'm talking about, you know, the public comment, I'm talking about environmental impact statement, I'm talking about the sort of debate as it played out, you know, lawmakers, city, county leaders. How do you understand the way that came together? What are you seeing when you see that process?
I mean, the process I feel like I saw was we want a gondola and we are going to create a process that leads us to our predetermined end of a gondola. How you define the problem ultimately
goes back to that, right?
Goes back to what the solution is. And I don't think that – I mean, here we have this national forest. We have these forest plans. We have watershed plans. We've essentially allowed a Department of Transportation to upend every single plan that exists. And there are dozens of jurisdictions with interest in these canyons, right? And in Little Cottonwood Canyon, you have a town of Alta. Mm-hmm. You have Salt Lake County. You have Sandy City and Salt Lake City with interests in these canyons. You have the National Forest. Every one of them has these plans. But the Department of Transportation effectively came in here. They not only declared eminent domain over a couple of properties, they declared eminent domain across all of the values that this canyon represents to our community.
What role should the federal government – this is public land, right? What role could they, should they have been playing in the process when we're talking about environmental impact statements, when we're talking about what role did they play? What role should they have played? How did that part in the equation work? It's not just a state issue if you're talking about federal land, right?
Right. I really saw, from what I have seen thus far in the process, just through records requests, I feel like the federal government played the role of trying to help the state get what it wanted. I mean, the Forest Service said, yeah, this decision is going to require us to amend our plan. They've acknowledged they're not defending their plan. They laid down for a Department of Transportation and for the ski area interests in these canyons. And I find that very problematic.
Carl Fisher, he's the executive director of Save Our Canyons. That's a local conservation group. How will a series of very large towers, 22 some odd, right, with these big concrete bases, how will that ruin the watershed? What will that do technically? What will that do to the water?
The towers themselves are going to be situated in some of the riparian areas. You're disturbing these riparian zones, these wetlands in some instances. They'll never be repaired, you know. That's once you pour concrete in something that is filtering our water supply naturally. They say they're not going to have roads. We have a hard time understanding how there's not going to be roads going into some of these sites. They say they'll build it all with helicopters, so there won't have to be roads. But roads degrade water quality. They create paths for erosion. They change the chemistry and the turbidity of our streams. They introduce new pollutants right into our waterways, which is our culinary drinking water here in the Salt Lake Valley. And the cost, should our water be impaired, not just by the construction, but by the induced use that is being invited, that's what I think the biggest impact to our water is this induced use, because these canyons have a finite capacity that's totally being ignored.
Does that get at this comment you made that we've invoked a few times from you that the gondola would, as you put it, undoubtedly destroy the canyon? Now, was that hyperbole a little, or when you talk about, for, as you did in those terms, about the water, you actually mean it, that it could really destroy that in that ecosystem, that environment?
I think it'll destroy the ecosystem. I believe it will destroy the experience, and it will destroy the romanticism of that canyon and what it has been. I mean, we're talking about towers that are bigger than several buildings in downtown Salt Lake going into this canyon. You won't look at that canyon and see the glacier that came down and touched Lake Bonneville. You're going to see these towers. You're going to see these gondola cabins pulsing by every 2.5 minutes. I think it has a huge, huge impact.
What's a view shed? This is a word that comes up all the time, and you sort of, I think you're talking about that. Like, what? It's the way we encounter a piece of wilderness, I guess. It's the way we see it, or the way we can regard it, I suppose. Like, what is a view shed, and why is that important? Why should that be into the equation, what it looks like? I get the argument about water. That makes sense, but why should also be built into the equation the idea that it's going to ruin, as you said, the kind of romanticism of the place?
Yeah, I mean, so through the forest planning process, viewshed is one of the things that they measure. And the Wasatch has high to very high scenic integrity, according to these plans.
High to very high.
High to very high.
Okay.
And they've said that that is an attribute of this place that needs to be protected until this gondola proposal came out. But the view shed is—
What do you mean until this gondola? So they ditched the idea of that being important during this process?
They're basically saying, yeah, we'll need to amend the plan and reduce our scenic integrity standards to allow this gondola to go forward. The Forest Service will have to change their management objective to protect the scenic integrity to allow this gondola to go forward.
Wow.
You know, I think there's always been comparisons of the transportation problem in Little Cottonwood Canyon and Big Cottonwood Canyon, which has been totally forgotten in this process, to Zion National Park. And I guess I liken this to, imagine yourself in Zion Canyon and, you know, the traffic was atrocious decades ago, right? Yeah. Before they implemented the shuttle system. But one of the most popular destinations in Zion Canyon is, you know, at the end of Zion Canyon, where you get to the Narrows Canyon, mm-hmm. right? And imagine if they had built something like a gondola all the way through Zion Canyon, how that would alter the sense of place, alter the majesty of this landscape that took, I mean, the Wasatch took billions of years to be created and carved by glaciers, by rock and water and ice fracturing and sliding and gliding for eons. Our civilization has been here since the mid-1800s. I just feel like we're on this path where it took a billion years to create this place and less than 200 to destroy it.
Carl, do you have a number in mind about how many people should be allowed up that canyon on a powder day? Like, do you have a finite number in mind? And because I want to get your sense of what – how many people should be up that canyon? And then – which leads, of course, to the question of how do you exclude people from that place? And who should be excluded, you know?
I don't have a number, but I think that the number and what that canyon is allowed to become, there's a relationship there. Hmm. If you go to a concert – at Red Butte, there's a capacity.
Yeah.
If you went beyond that capacity, it would not only be dangerous, but it would probably alter that experience that you have. So as you put more people up there, you're going to need more bathrooms. You're going to need more things that people need. You're putting people in an alpine environment in the dead of winter. It's a hostile environment.
Yeah.
And there are amenities that are going to be needed. So I think the number of people up there is really dependent upon how many more amenities we want to allow up there. The ski areas and the ski industry doesn't make money on lift tickets. They make money on
cheeseburgers.
Burgers and yeah. Condos, real estate
yeah.
is the big money maker right. for them,
yeah.
right? And so I think that that's really ultimately what this is about, because that's where the profit margin is getting more people up there, spending more money, and what is that going to do to the natural environment for the people that just need to get away, or they had a bad day at work or a bad day at school, and you just want to go out there and be in the wild and be alone with your thoughts and try and grapple with the heavy things of life in a beautiful, scenic, wild place. I think that's what these canyons mean to a lot of people. So how many people should be at the ski resorts? I think it's dependent upon what we want to invite in these canyons.
But it doesn't sound like because the project has been approved, because lawmakers have started to fund, you know, a phase of the project, it doesn't sound like those questions are being asked. It sounds like they've already resolved that we're going to get people up there, and we're going to get them up there through a series of big gondola towers. So it sounds like that those questions that you were asking about numbers, that's not going to happen.
Yeah, they totally ignored that, and it's a fire ready aim.
Can you change the trajectory of where this project seems to be headed at this point? Again, it's officially approved by the Department of Transportation. You've got funding. It seems like it's in the works. What are you thinking about whether, you know, the chances of slowing the process, stopping the process, getting, you know, officials to say, oh, these solutions that played out in phase one, these as have been described, common sense solutions worked. Maybe we don't need to spend, you know, upwards of $1 billion on a gondola system. But what are you seeing now that gives you a sense of that?
I mean, we've been, I think us and our broader community and our partners have all been on one hand excited about phase one, because we do see that as an option to try. If that can be successful, perhaps we can stave the snow sheds, these concrete bunkers that they're going to basically build in Little Cottonwood Canyon, and the gondola off. However, on the same hand, you know, we've been trying to work with the county and UDOT to say, we want to invest in making this good, because there's a fair amount of distrust with the Department of Transportation, but they're not allowing people to engage in making phase one work. And meanwhile, UTA continues to – the Utah Transit Authority continues to cut service in these canyons, which makes us concerned that they're not being earnest and genuine about making phase one a go. You know, all we've heard UDOT say is we're spending $240 million on this. How could we not be serious? And it's like, well, I think we've seen the state of Utah – inappropriately use millions of taxpayer dollars in the past. So let's make it good. Let's make it successful. Let's make it robust.
Dave Fields of Snowbird told us that he thinks people will – he said he acknowledges there's a lot of very engaged, emotional people about this. But he says eventually people will come around to the idea. How do you respond to that?
The Utah Department of Transportation picked an alternative that it said in its EIS failed to meet its own purpose and need because they're situating the parking structure and this gondola base in the area where traffic is already the worst. You're not going to be able to get to this thing. They didn't look at queuing times. I mean, you have one gondola cabin holding 30-ish people every 2.5 minutes.
Right.
So you have this 2,500-stall parking garage. That thing could probably be filled up in maybe an hour, but it will be a traffic. You'll be sitting in traffic getting to that garage. Let's just say the average vehicle has two people. So that's 5,000 people. The gondola moves 1,000 people per hour. That means if there are 5,000 people waiting, it's going to take 5 hours to get up the canyon. I think Dave Fields thinks that this is like something out of Star Trek where, you know, people just get beamed up the canyon. But it doesn't – it's that's not how it works. I love the idea of having a carless canyon. I think it would be incredible. A gondola won't do it. It can't do it. And I think this will be a massive failure.
There's this question I put to Dave Fields. If this goes according to plan and there's a gondola system in, you know, 25 years, whatever, how will that place and the experience of that place have change?
You know, I think you're still going to have traffic jams on the road because 70% of the people are going to be – I mean, that road is still going to be at capacity. You're not removing people from the road. The ski areas will be reaping the benefits of charging for parking at those places, which Dave Fields has said, man, there's real money in parking. They don't want to lose that revenue stream. You'll have massive lines for people getting on those ski lifts because you're going to have more people, which is going to increase the pressure for those ski areas to expand. I think that's the end game, really, is ski area expansion. And this dream of the ski industry to build their One Wasatch concept, this interconnected ski complex. Meanwhile, we're going to have dustier snow and the questionable impacts of climate change. So looking into my crystal ball, I guess, I think it's really about development, but I don't know that there's going to be that great of skiing by the time this thing comes around.
Carl Fisher, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
That's Carl Fisher. He's the executive director of Save Our Canyons. It's a local conservation group. Radio West is a production of KUER. You can subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. And feel free to reach out with comments or questions or ideas. You can email us at radiowest@kuer.org. Our intern is Elle Cowley, program produced by Benjamin Bombard and Tim Slover. Carrie Watson is our executive producer. I'm Doug Fabrizio.